All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 23 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today, we're going to pick up the story where we left off, which is to say the great ancient Egypt of the pyramids collapsed. We're going to look a little bit more closely at that story, in particular at this funny-sounding pharaoh named person, Pepi, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about him. And then I'm going to tell you about what happens afterwards, how Egypt fell apart, and then how it was put back together again. And what we're going to see is, well, it's still Egypt, and it still has pharaohs, and a lot of the things that this Egypt is are similar to the most famous part, the most representative part of Egypt. But it's not the same. So I'm calling it a new Egypt. Historians have other variety of names as well for telling the difference between the different parts of Egyptian history. And what we're going to see is that we're going to have to talk about, well, it's a new Egypt. It's a different Egypt. It's definitely not as important in history. But I'm going to start things off today with a little bit of a strange mystery. And that is that it was probably a better Egypt. So let me put that out there as an interesting puzzle, right? Because remember, somebody remind us all, what is the most important word in history? If all the hands don't go up, that's it. We're going home. Patrick, what's the most important word in history?
Important.
Important. Okay, thank goodness. All right, we got it on the first try. Okay, right? Okay, so what did I just suggest? I just suggested, okay, the most important part of Egyptian history is the Age of the Pyramids, which we're going to, I'm going to go ahead and bring that up on my screen here and show you a timeline that I'm going to be giving to you guys pretty soon. And so that's the most important part of Egyptian history, okay? But what I'm going to suggest to you is that when this part of Egypt fell apart because of this character, Pepi II, okay, Egypt had a long struggle, a civil war, a very disastrous time. That certainly was negative. And then a new Egypt emerged. And I'm going to suggest to you that that Egypt was better than the original one. Okay? So, and yet, less important. So, what are the two key words here which do not mean the same thing? This is kind of the really important point here that when we talk about the word important, we have to understand that it is not something else. What's that word that we have to be careful of? Let me give you guys a hint. The pyramids are the most important monument in Egyptian history. But what were they to the lives of the 100,000 slaves that built them, in the people that were ruled by pharaohs who pretended to be gods? They were very important, but would we say that they're good? Would we say that this life that the Egyptians had was good? Who would want to be a slave having to build a pyramid for 20 years? We don't know how many thousands and tens of thousands of them died working on the project, but we know that it's a horrible life to be a slave, no matter what. And this whole culture was dedicated to building a gigantic place to put the dead body of somebody and then force everybody else to look at it all day long. Is that Does that sound like a, you know, great place to live? Oh my gosh. No, right? So the difference is here that we're really, that is very important. Keep coming back to that word. Is that there is, important is not the same thing as, what's a good word to use here that would help us focus on a good idea? Julia? Say it again, because you did it too fast.
Good?
Good. Okay, good. Mr. Powell was being very subtle there when he said, choose a good word. All right, so, good, right? Important is not the same thing as good. That's something that is so important to know in history. Who can think of other things that are, well, let's think of things that are really bad, sadly. Does anybody know examples of things that are really bad that are important? Other than these really mean pharaohs, can you think of some, maybe somebody from last year, some anchor facts from American history that are really negative, really bad things, but they're very important? Henry Wyatt?
World War II.
Yeah, a war. All the wars in history. Oh my gosh. People are killing each other. It's terrible. That's an example of something that is important. And you know what? The result was good, but, you know, the war itself was terrible. The result was good. Nazi Germany was ruined. The Empire of Japan was destroyed. All those are good results. But the war itself, all those people dying, that's a terrible thing. Okay, so that's an example of something that's important, but not good. All right, we're going to get into a period of Egyptian history where there seem to be some better things, some good things happening. But here's, again, the strange puzzle. They're not important to history. So that then, you know, that's why I say it's a puzzle. To think about this is, what? How does this work? How come sometimes good things are not important? So, I mean, they might have been important to somebody, but they're not important in history. How can that be? Why might that be? Interesting questions. And this is when, if you learn these sorts of things, then you can ask really interesting questions and have really interesting thoughts about history. Because history is such an interesting, complicated story. So, I want to just point this out here. This timeline that I have for you that I'm starting to construct is only for Egyptian history. Okay? Because we won't be able to fit all these various things on all of our facts that we encounter in history together. So I'm going to make an Egyptian history timeline for you guys. So this has just a timeline of these crucial events. Okay, after Menes-Narmer unified Egypt. Okay, then we have this period in which the pharaohs are getting more and more control, and there we have this idea of the god king, and pretty soon somebody's going to invent the idea, hey, let's build giant pyramids to celebrate the god kings. And that starts around 2650. So that's this strange step pyramid of Zoser. Okay? And this whole Egyptian culture is going to peak literally around 2500 BC with the tallest pyramids. And then it's going to end after this character that has the funny name, Pepi II. And I want to show you this picture close up here because I want to tell you a little bit more about Pepi II and why he matters to our story. So let's see if I can bring that up. Sorry, it's not quite ready. So let me see what I can do to bring it up. Okay, here's an interesting picture. It's a picture of Pepi II. Can you tell which one of these people he is? Because this is not a picture of just one person, evidently. Right, so which one is Pepi? Rosetta?
think he's the smaller one.
He's the smaller creature. Let me show you this picture from another angle. That's my favorite picture of it. It's a really nice photograph. On Wikipedia, we have a lesser image, but I'm just going to show it to you anyway from the side so that you can tell the difference. Here's the same thing, right? And what can you tell about this character? Who do you think this is? Who would this be to Pepe the Second, Patrick? Based on just the shape of her body. Who would be the best guess of who this is? He's a tiny creature, so who's this?
His mother?
His mother. Yeah, he's on her lap, right? So this is... Oh, I could never possibly pretend to pronounce this. But Oxenmerida. Oxenmerida the Second and her son Pepe the Second. And so one of the reasons why Pepe the Second was a weak king, look at this, was he became the king when? Rosetta, read it off the screen for us.
He succeeded to the throne at age 6 after the death of
Menmere the First. Okay, but the key thing is he became the ruler of Egypt at age 6. Okay, tell me why that is a dangerous problem. There's nobody else to rule the kingdom. Why is that a dangerous problem? Opal?
He's only 6. He's like a 6-year-old in kindergarten who doesn't know very much.
Yeah, right? So who's really going to be in charge, Opal?
I don't know. Some other people below him, I guess.
Okay. And who's the person that we know is the one that has to do the work of the Pharaoh, Patrick?
Vizier.
Well, okay. Vizier is one way of saying it. Vizier is another. Mm-hmm. No problem. Okay. So Vizier, Vizier, it doesn't matter. It's potato, potato. All right. So the Vizier, the Vizier. Okay. Who else? This picture is a good hint. Who else might really be in charge of the kingdom? Julia? Mommy, right? Because he's only 6 and he's got a mommy who's a grown-up. And she is, you know, was the queen and a very important character. She knows all about how the life of the pharaoh is. So she might be in charge. We might have the vizier in charge. But then remember that lower in the hierarchy, we have other people who are going to start pretty much doing their own business and taking care of things by themselves. I don't know how easily I can bring that back here. Let's see. Let me see if I can bring that back. The diagram of Egypt, Europe. There we go. Okay. Who's gonna start? Let's say nobody's really in charge up here and it's not clear who's in charge up here. Who's gonna start taking care of business by themselves? Start ruling different parts of the country without the input of the vizier or the pharaoh. You gotta look lower in the hierarchy. What are they called in ancient Egypt? Henry or Wyatt?
Right. Nomarchs.
The nomarchs, right, the lords. Okay, so they start to do things by themselves, and they start to have, and we start to have a struggle in this country to keep things organized. So if we go back to the timeline here, I know it's getting moving around between a lot of different things. We see that Pepe the Second probably ruled around 2200, give or take. It's not that clear. But afterwards, by about 2150, it's all over. So this... Oh, by the way, I'll show you Pepe II's pyramid. And it's kind of a good symbol of how things turned out. Let's go to Pepe II's pyramid. Oops. How's it look to you guys? This is really interesting, I think. Okay, how's it look, guys? How would you rate it, Rosetta?
I can't even tell what's the pyramid.
Yeah, this is
I
it
can't
right,
see
this is it
things.
right here. But of
I just
course,
see
it's in
ruins.
ruins, right? So it means that, and if the pyramids at Giza, which were built 400 years earlier, have lasted that much better, what does that tell us about the difference between these pyramids? How great of a pyramid this is? How well constructed it is compared to the great pyramids at Giza? How important was it? How hard was it to build this one? Did they do as good of a job with it and so on? Right? It is now a mound. It's a mess. And so that tells us a lot. It tells us that they basically, Pepe II, even though he ruled for over 90 years, even though he was such an important pharaoh, could he get the people to build a bigger pyramid? Could he get the people to create something as amazing as the other pharaohs did? Well, obviously not, right? Obviously not. And then Egypt really fell apart after that. So we get what's called a civil war. A civil war means a war between the people of a country. And we have the nomarchs kind of scrambling to figure out who's going to be in charge. And we have apparently in the time of Pepi, there were two viziers. That already is a very interesting fact. There was a vizier for Upper Egypt and a vizier for Lower Egypt. So this is interesting. We'll come back to this more than once here in history. What does that kind of sound like? If there's a vizier for both part, for each part, does that give you a clue as to how things were going? Why would there be a need for a vizier for both parts, Opal, for each part?
Egypt was ununited,
Yeah, very good. Very good. Right? So,
separated.
yeah, separate, right? In some sense, it had to be treated as two separate things. Okay? Wait a minute. Remember our geography. Where's our geography? Right? Lower Egypt, Upper Egypt. There's a vizier in Thebes, which is where the pharaohs are. And then there's a vizier that's got to take care of things in Lower Egypt, here kind of north of this line, because the country's becoming more of an and more of a mess. So there has to be more people working on organizing separate parts of it, because the job of organizing it is getting harder and harder. But of course, we already said, if there's one vizier, that's hard enough, because he doesn't necessarily follow the orders of the pharaoh. What if there's two viziers? Does that sound better or worse to you guys? We could kind of say both sides, couldn't we? Which way would you look at it, Rosetta? Better or worse?
I'll probably say worse because that means two people. And they could
Go ahead.
eventually go again.
They could go against each other, okay? Right? So yeah, they not only is it you have to worry about one person following the orders of the pharaoh. If the pharaoh is in Thebes and the vizier is over here, say in Memphis, I don't know if that was built at the time, but there's different locations. Let's say the pharaoh is the vizier somewhere over here, right? It's pretty easy for him to do whatever he wants over here because the pharaoh is way over here. And he might make a conspiracy with the nomarchs over here. They rebel. There is a big civil war. And remember what I said yesterday. There was an Egyptian historian called Manetho who said there were 70 pharaohs in 70 days. So that means chaos. That means that there wasn't really a pharaoh, right? Because what is a pharaoh? A pharaoh is a ruler of the country. Can you call yourself the ruler of the country if you're only in charge for one day? Obviously not. It's a mess, Right? So Egypt falls apart after Pepi II, and we have this long civil war, and then we have a character who's going to step up and put the country back together again. He was a vizier, and he became a pharaoh. So the person who put Egypt back together again, his name is Mentuhotep II. Okay, so let's talk about him because it's kind of interesting. He was a vizier from Thebes. And he is the one, as you see here, who did what? Reunited Egypt. He put Egypt back together again. Okay, so, but he was a vizier. He had not been a pharaoh before. So who can think of something that's kind of important about him? And one of the things that is very clear to somebody like Mentuhotep II, he was never a pharaoh, but he becomes a pharaoh by winning a war. Okay? Who can kind of understand why this would be so important for a new Egypt? Remember what I said, a new Egypt is going to emerge. Okay, why would the fact that he was a vizier and he used an army to bring Egypt back together again, how is this going to affect Egypt? Opal?
I was thinking that it means that he was a pharaoh that, you know, he was proved that he could do it instead of just being born into it. And just by luck being born into it, he proved that he could be the pharaoh.
All right, that's
so maybe it was stronger.
Okay, very interesting answer, right? So in other words, he knew that being a pharaoh is about how well you can organize a country. It has nothing to do with whether or not somebody pretends that you are a god who was born to a mother who was, you know, the queen of a god and all that kind of stuff. No, that ended. That disappeared. That was the whole thing with Pepi II, and it didn't work. So this is a real man doing a practical job of ruling a kingdom. So he becomes the pharaoh by hard work. Right? And, well, violence and all the other things. Kind of like Menes Narmer, the original unifier. Right? Anybody that's going to unify a country knows what the hard work is going to be, the real hard work. So, an interesting thing about Mentuhotep II is, knowing what he knew about Egypt, he did not build a pyramid for himself. The age of the pyramids was over. What did Mentuhotep II's tomb look like? Very interesting tomb. Not this one, because that's Pepi II. Let me go ahead and bring it to you and take a look. This tomb... Now, there's so many interesting things about this tomb that tell us about how Egypt was changing. But, I mean, right from the picture, you can tell me one thing that's really significant about this tomb compared to all the pyramids. How is Egypt changing now that it's put back together again, Rosetta?
It seems to be more... Definitely more advanced building. It's built into the wall, in a way. It's built into the cliff, basically.
Okay, so whether it's more advanced or not, I don't know that we can make that judgment. And the pyramids, I think, are the most advanced in the sense that they're very hard to construct. This you dig into, as you say, into the wall, so it could still be hard to build. But I don't think that it's more advanced. I don't think that's a fair statement, but... Built into the wall, how is that different? I want you guys to think about this. How is that different than the pyramids? All right, think about the pyramids. You got this flat desert, right? If you want, we can go back to this image. I can't remember what lecture it was during. Let's see if we can find it. This image that we have. Is this a good one? Yeah, see? This is the symbol of that ancient Egypt, the age of the pyramids. Flat desert. Everybody looks at the colossal pyramid of the pharaoh. Okay? What's so importantly different about this? Julia?
It's like smaller and it's not as noticeable.
Yeah, it's not as noticeable. It's not a great monument tomb like the pyramids. It's still an impressive place. But here's something else that's important about it. It's not in the same place. The tombs of Giza are the pharaohs building their pyramids and telling everybody in Egypt, we are the ruler, and look where the pyramids are. What's an important fact about the pyramids? What part of Egypt are they in? Patrick, they're at Giza, so what part of Egypt are they in?
Lower
Egypt. What did Menes-Narmer do? He was from Upper Egypt and he
conquered Lower Egypt.
The unification of Egypt was all about the pharaohs controlling Lower Egypt. Guess where Manjuhotep II's tomb is? It's hidden. It's inside of a cliff face. And Rosetta knows where I'm going with this. Go ahead, Rosetta.
It's in Upper Egypt.
Good guess. That's what we call an educated guess. Good job. It's in Thebes. Way up the river. To keep it away from Lower Egypt. No more pyramid. No more showing off. It's an important tomb. He wants to have a monument to his great pharaoh, you know, because he reunified Egypt. But it's not quite hidden, right? This is still very visible. It's still very impressive. And historians think there was a small pyramid here as well as part of the complex, but obviously not very visible and definitely kind of hidden in Upper Egypt. And we're going to see more and more of this change in the way that the pharaohs behave. They're not going to build big pyramids in Lower Egypt anymore because they know that, well, the job of a pharaoh is really difficult, and they're going to now decide we're going to focus on other things. Instead of enslaving people to make pyramids, we got to focus on the practical and kind of getting everybody to celebrate our godhood as the pharaohs. We're going to work on practical projects. So one of the interesting things that happens, and here's where I go with this idea of the new Egypt was maybe better than the old Egypt. It was, in other words, life was better. More positive. The pharaohs might have done better things, good things, because here is an example. One of the pharaohs of the new Egypt, his name was Senusrit. I can type it for you in a second if you want. Let me bring up, I gotta go back to my screen. I'm really jumping around here between different displays. But one of the pharaohs of the new kingdom named Senusrit did something very fascinating for Egypt. I'm going to go ahead and draw a line and you tell me what it is. You can tell me what it is. What do you suppose that is? If it's blue and it goes from the Red Sea to the Nile, Patrick?
He connected them.
He connected them? What do we call that? What is a man-made channel? What do we call that? Henry, Wyatt?
Channel?
Well, yeah, but there's a special word for it with a few, slightly fewer letters to it. Sigourney? A canal, right? There's one today, actually. There's one today, and it goes like this. Wait a minute. Sometimes I have trouble drawing. on the screen. There's one today and it goes like this. And it's called the Suez Canal. But the pharaohs of this new Egypt, which historians call the Middle Kingdom of Egypt, one of them built a canal linking the Nile to the Red Sea. Now that seems like a really interesting project. Why would somebody do that? This is a project to make the life of Egyptians better. What do you think that it would be useful for, to have a canal? What's it useful now for today, right? Why do we have a canal between the Mediterranean and the Red Sea today? What are canals for? Why do people make man-made rivers? Rosetta? What are they good for?
Well, just to get around, to navigate.
Okay, to navigate, and so to get from one place to another. Alright, are we talking about tourism here for Egyptians to be able to go and just to be able to move around? What is the thing that you need to be able to move around that really makes life better? Today, things move around a lot from all around the entire planet making life better. What do we have to be able to move around? People, certainly. But what else? So remember, this is called a canal. Okay? Just for those who want that word. All right? What is it that this canal today moves, for instance, from the Middle East to Europe and the Middle East to America, with large ships going through this canal and bringing all that stuff to other parts of the world, especially oil? It's bringing all the goods that people make in trade with each other. This is really important. If we don't have that oil, we can't drive our cars around, right? So trade definitely improves life. Bringing goods from other parts of the world. Who knows what this Red Sea connects to? I'm going to have to back out here. Who knows what this Red Sea connects to? Keeps going and keeps going. What's the ocean down here? You guys need some world geography review. It's the Indian Ocean. So you can trade with Asia if you can sail on this ocean. If you can make a connection between the Mediterranean Sea and this ocean, then you can start having trade between these regions. The more you can do that, definitely the better that your life will be as far as trade is concerned. So the wealth of Egypt was probably increasing at this time. The quality of life of Egyptians was probably improving. That sounds like a better time to be alive than the age of the pyramids. But it was all temporary. And, well, sadly, trade is a form of contact with other people. What is, well, the negative part of that contact with other people, especially when primitive people meet each other and they're all strangers and they have different gods and they have trouble getting along? What happens? And sadly, this is where the story of Egypt is going to go. What are they going to do? Julia?
They get into, like, a fight and a war, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Egypt starts to become connected to its neighbors. Egypt starts to have contact with people in other parts of this region. And we are going to see that Egypt is going to start getting involved in wars with its neighbors. This is kind of the negative side of our story. Egypt is going to get involved in wars with its neighbor to the south, Nubia, down here, as they have more and more contact, more sailing, more trade along the Red Sea. And they're also going to get involved with another pretty significant group of people over here, which has important connections to the story of ancient Christianity. So we have neighbors Nubia and Israel, for starters, that Egypt is going to go to war with. And as we're going to see, the more connections that the Egyptians make with other people, sadly, the more that is also going to lead to wars. So, the better part of Egypt is, okay, the pharaohs are working on new projects, trying to make life better for the people of Egypt. They're not making them, enslaving them to build tombs. Instead, they're probably still enslaving them because somebody's got to dig the canal, but at least what they're making is a canal, right? At least what they're making is something that's going to allow them to have more trade, that it's going to allow them to have better transportation and increase the wealth of the country. Okay, that's a positive thing. But along with that comes contact with other cultures, people that have different gods and different beliefs and who don't like what Egypt stands for. They're going to have conflicts and pretty soon they're going to have wars with each other as well, sadly. So we're getting into a new part of Egyptian history. Some of it's better, some of it not. Okay, so we'll pick this up tomorrow and we'll start filling in more of these features of our timeline as well with Egyptian history. And what we're going to find is that pretty soon Egypt is going to come into contact with another part of the world that we haven't talked about yet, but which is now going to become more important. A part of the world called Mesopotamia. So we're going to start paying more attention to Mesopotamia because it's becoming more important, and less attention to Egypt because it's becoming less important. The Egyptians have done what they're going to do. They make the pyramids, they're permanent, they're impressive to this day, and we are impressed by them to this day. But after that, they're not really going to do anything that really we admire today, that we still pay attention to today, that's still important today, sadly. They're going to get replaced by other people that they're, first they're going to fight with them, and then they're going to be conquered by them. Okay, that's it for today, folks. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Bell.
Bye-bye.